Well, this week, of course, we're moving on to the book of Deuteronomy. And before we get into that, I've had a few people ask me about my kind of offhanded comment about snake handling in church. So I did want to clear that up. I have preached on Sand Mountain enough to have been worried about doing that, this one.
Don't talk about Sand Mountain. There's people.
I know there's people. I love Sand Mountain, we did that in Louisiana from time to time, but it wasn't part of the service. It just happened, So I was asked, and so I thought I might better clear that up. Some of you heard the story before, but when we were at Hillsdale Baptist for 5 years as their pastor, that's where I finished up my doctoral work at, and that's where both of the kids were born. And Jay was a toddler, about 18 months to 2 years old at the time. And Darlena may or may not have been pregnant with Elena. I think she was probably pregnant with Elena when this happened. But when you've got kids that age and trying to get to church, and of course we lived in the parsonage next door to the church, on Sunday morning, I would get dressed and she would get Jay dressed, and then I would take Jay with me to the church so that she could get dressed to come on to church. And being next door, part of my job as pastor was to unlock the church and turn on the lights. And Hillsdale was a two-story shotgun church building. And the sanctuary was there, the main part, and then there were four classrooms down each side of the building on both floors, and the back, and then across the front of the church there were four rooms, and the ones downstairs across the front, one was a little office kind of for me, and then the other, though my real office was at the house. But a kind of an office, that's where the copy machine was and stuff like that. And we had moved to a copy machine from the mimeograph machine. Not long, but we did have a copy machine. And the other side was a cry room. And some of you will know what a cry room was, and the nursery. Their lights, while there were light switches for the sanctuary, the lights for all of the side rooms, there weren't switches. You turned them on and off with the breaker box. And the breaker box was in the closet in the nursery. And again, I was there for 5 years, and so about been there at this time about three or four years, about 4 years, and so I knew which switches to hit, and I never usually turned the light in the closet on. I just opened the closet door, reached in, flipped the breaker box open, flipped the switches, and went on. Well, this Sunday I had walked over, and I had Jay with me, and so we'd unlocked the building, and I was getting ready to turn the lights on, and we'd walked in there, and he was playing, because like I said, it's the nursery. So that's where all the toys and stuff were. And you know how a toddler will toddle up between your legs? Well, I'm standing in that closet door, and Jay toddles up between my legs. I reach in and, again, didn't turn the light on, flipped the breaker box open, reached to flip the breakers, and when I reached to flip the breakers, I grabbed hold of a snake. And I grabbed it in the middle. So it wasn't a good place to have a hold of it. So it was striking at my arm. It was wiggling, of course, at the bottom. And Jay was standing at my feet. And I had two thoughts in my mind: don't step on him and don't drop the snake. And so I finally again, not knowing even what kind of snake I had, got him back up behind me, and I threw the snake at the wall and reached over and flipped the light. Because again, he had bit at me a couple of times, and turned on the light and saw that it was a speckled king snake. And so I was okay, and he was just watched him crawl up the wires and go into the attic, which was a good thing, because he was probably going up and down those wires mouse hunting. But when you don't know what you got a hold of, and you're trying to protect your little son, it's kind of... That's my snake handling story.
And
I didn't die. And so that's I have integrity on Sand Mountain of my faith that I'm able to handle snakes and not die.
Do you think it was king snakes in the Book of Mark that they talk about?
I don't think it was, but I don't want to handle any other kind. And I won't even list how many snakes we killed there at that church while I was there that weren't king snakes. But that's my snake handling story. So I just wanted to clear that up, because I've had half a dozen people ask since Sunday morning about handling snakes in church. So all right. I turned the light on every time after that experience. Till we moved to North Alabama, I turned the light on every single time.
Did you warn the next guy?
Yeah.
No, that may be why he didn't stay there long.
It must be something with masters, because Chase had the same thing down in Bruton at the church down there.
Yeah. We were talking about, I mentioned First Springfield Sunday morning when y'all did surprise me, and I want to thank you for that. And Darlene and I were talking, we still can't figure out how it's been 40 years, but the next little church that I served, I killed two or three snakes there, and who knows how many we killed at the other places in Louisiana. So that wasn't a completely uncommon thing. And one of the little churches we had, you could see the ground through the floor, so let's just put it that way. And the parsonages we lived in, and so we killed one inside the house, and that happened a couple of occasions. But
when you retire, you need to write a book.
I have thought about it. That would just be one story. There, anyways. All right, let's our memory verse this week, and we're going to look at it in a couple of weeks. But it's a verse that we talk about all the time. It's Deuteronomy 6:4-5. We know it from the New Testament as the Great Commandment. In the Old Testament, in Hebrew, we usually refer to it as the Shema. We talk about it every time we do child dedication. We talk about it when we talk about discipleship for our church, because it is the foundation verse that we use for our plan for discipleship for all ages of people. And you know it, it's Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And of course, Jesus quoted it in every one of the Gospels, and actually a couple times in one. And it is what he said was the most important commandment. As an Israelite, they quoted some of the more orthodox ones, and for centuries, at least five times a day. and it's what they quote in the as they go into the synagogue and put on their tallit prayer shawl, their tallit. In Hebrew, it's Shema Yisrael Yahweh Eloheinu Yahweh HaKah. And so that's why we call it the Shema here, which is the word here. And so it is extremely important. And we've got our revival this week, and next week we're going to come in, but we're going to save that passage, and that's what we're going to look at Mother's Day. And so we'll look at that passage and talk about it a good bit then. Only four chapters of Deuteronomy. There's lots of good things in Deuteronomy. So, again, I guess as an Old Testament guy, I think about all the ones we're skipping, but Bill did a good job of picking out important passages for us, and that's what he's done here in Deuteronomy. And so tonight we're going to hit parts of two of those chapters. And hopefully we'll at least talk about part of one, because that's where we're going right now. So turn with me to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31. And this is a great passage that talks about Moses' upcoming death and kind of commissions Joshua to succeed him. And since I was talking about Hillsdale, when I left there, I preached this passage for the first time, Neil, and you've heard other people preach it, but I preached, Moses is dead, Joshua is coming. Now, 5 years doesn't sound like a long time, but at that time, in about 75 years of their history, that was the longest tenure of any pastor they had ever had. And one of the guys who followed me did stay there longer since then, but it's a passage that I preached when I left, but it was a passage that I dug out when I became interim when I was at the state board. And so I would preach that to help the church get ready, that their old pastor has left and now they've got a new pastor coming. So I'd usually preach it right at the end of that interim time to help them get ready. So I had this in my files to preach at Heritage, and I never got to preach it. So we're going to talk about it tonight, but I'm not preaching it. I just want you to understand that. Because unless I die, I'm not leaving you. Okay, but this is the scene. So Moses has led the people for 40 years in the wilderness. Moses is now 120 years old. Remember, he was 40 years old. We forget this often because we still think of him as a young man when he fled Egypt. But when he killed the Egyptian and fled, he was 40 years old. And then he went into the wilderness, and then it was 40 years later when he saw the burning bush and God sent him back to Egypt. So he was 80 years old when all of this started in Egypt. Okay, I want you to think about that. So he was 80 when he became the leader, and so now they have wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years. So how old does that make him? That makes him 120 years old. And so he is approaching the end of his life. And remember, last time when we finished up Numbers, remember what happened? Miriam died and Aaron died. And remember the prophecy about the judgment when the spies came back from the land before the wandering Sabbath. What would happen? Everyone who was under 18 years of age or 20 years of age would die, except for Caleb and Joshua. And remember, Moses' name isn't on that list. And so that was before why he wasn't going in had happened. And then we talked just while we were in Numbers about why, and that was when God told him to speak to the rock, and in his anger, he struck it twice And there were consequences for sin. And so that's what we see here in this story, and then in chapter 34 when we look at it in just a moment. So let's look at that passage together, and let's talk about what we see here. So let's just walk through these first eight verses together. And then Moses went out, and he spoke these words to all of Israel. I'm now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you, but the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. So they've gotten to this point where Moses says, I can't lead you anymore. Now, Moses had been their leader for 40 years. Now Heritage has that history of having long-term pastors and staff members, you know. Andrew Smith was here almost 20 years. Hayden Center was here almost 20 years. I don't know the history of all of Clayton Street, but I know they had a good history of long-tenured staff members. And long-tenured staff members, you think about how long Lee Wright served this church. You think about even now, Kenneth has been here 17 years. Jennifer is working on her 15th year. And so we've seen long-tenured people, and we tend to think about how special that is, and how special it is for us, and how special it is for us as a church to have that stability of long leadership. But don't you think about it? He's been the leader for 40 years. And remember, Joshua and Caleb are the only two that were adults when he became the leader. And so all of these kids have grown up with him being their leader for most of their life. You know, as we're on the verge of graduation, and I look at our kids who are about to graduate, and I think about them, and they were three or four when we came here to be the pastor. So all of their memories are with me as their pastor. And there are two of them who were here then, and the other one came not long after that. So for these kids, I'm have been their pastor, and so that's a special relationship that we have, and for Moses to have done that for 40 years, that's a special relationship. And think about it, for 40 years, he has led them through some great experiences together. When you share miracles together, that kind of binds you together, doesn't it? He was there, they were there with him when God parted the Red Sea. They were there with him when he brought the Ten Commandments down. They were there with him when God delivered them and caused all kinds of miracles to happen, when he held his hands up and they won the battle. They were there for all of these wonderful experiences. And sometimes as a pastor, I get to be there for one, you know, I get to be there when someone was baptized. I get to be there when someone got married. I get to be there sometimes when they celebrate special occasions in their life. And so those great experiences had bound them together. As I was thinking about teaching on this tonight, I thought about what we've been going through this last weeks, and the information we shared with y'all about Nathan. And, you know, Nathan's been here, and we've seen some good things happen and part of his ministry. And so we see this, again, it's a natural part of life. And you can think back to some of those pastors or some of those youth ministers or some of those staff members who were special in your life and those positive experiences that you shared together. You know, I remember Dr. Brazil who prayed with me when I received Christ. I remember Richard Phipps, who was my youth minister and minister of music when I was early in my youth ministry. And then I remember Billy Reddy, who was my youth minister when I surrendered to call, and our friendship that we still have today because of You know, truthfully, I was, he came right about the time I graduated and was there for the first, the year I was in college, but that's who I talked to when I surrendered to the ministry. That's who Darlene and my second date was to, was to Bible study at Billy's house. You know, because we graduated on a Monday night, and Tuesday night was Bible study, youth Bible study at Billy's house, and so I drug her with me to Bible study. And so, you know, that kind of experiences together are important and bind us together. But, you know, there had been some bad experiences too. You know, we kind of went through, as we were going through Numbers, and I told you, and we talked about on Wednesday night, there were about 16 times where they messed up, and God had to punish them. And, you know, the ground, they complained, the fire came and consumed the priest. You over and over again, we see them mess up. And you know, the truth is, when we have leaders, some of the things that bind us are those tough experiences. You know, how many people I talk to and say, hey, I remember you were there when mama died or daddy died or my spouse died, or how you were there in the hospital when we were facing this crisis, or I remember when I lost my job and what. And so leaders build those kinds of relationships too. And so you can imagine the emotion, you know, and Nathan and, you know, when he read his letter, he kind of broke down and cried. When he came and told me in my office weeks before that this was starting, he cried then. And again, it's emotional. This is kind of the first time he's really gone through this. He'd had a couple of other staff positions, but to have been here and all that's happened to them here. And so, you know, it's tough. And you think about that, you know, for him. He went through COVID with us. I mean, that was a different experience, and he did some important things as we made that journey together for us. And so you know, we always share those bad times together. And I say this because it's our leaders, it's our friends, and it's not just our pastor, it's our Sunday school teacher, it's just a friend in our class, our life group. But we build relationships with those people because we go through great things together and we go through tough times together. And that's why God's called us to love each other. And that's what God has called us to do, is to go through life together. So they've done that, and they've done that for 40 years. And then Moses said, now God has told me that I'm no longer going to lead you. And so you can imagine how dramatic and how difficult this time was for them. But I want you to listen to the rest of it. Look at verse 3. It says, God told me, I can't even go. You shall not cross the Jordan. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But look at verse 3. The Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you will take possession of their land. And Joshua also will cross over ahead of you, as the Lord said. And so here's the good news. And this is when I preach this to churches that were about to call a new pastor. And I'll share this with you for the future one day. There'll be a day when I won't be your pastor. That day will come. Hopefully it won't be for another 10 years or longer. There will be a day when I won't. But here's the thing. I'm not the leader of this church. God is the leader of this church. I serve him, and I hope you follow me as I follow him. But he's not going to go everywhere. There will never be a day when Jesus is not the head of this church. And so it's important that we keep that in focus. And it'll be just like with youth minister, just like with other things, that there are times when leadership changes, there are times when our life group leader changes, there are times when people come and people go, But the key is that this church belongs to God, and He will always be our leader. There'll be times when we will move and go somewhere else. But we go to a place where God is still the one who's in charge. He's still the one who's leading. And so there's always stability because He's always the leader. And it's just our job to follow Him. And we can lead, we can follow Him with confidence because we know He's the one who's in control. And so the Lord will lead us into the future, into the promised land, into the place God has for us. So that's the question. Who is our leader? Our leader is God and Jesus. And that's who we're following. We're all following Him together. And so that's what Moses reminds the Israelites. All the stuff that we went through, yeah, I went through it with you. But I didn't part the Red Sea. I didn't write the Ten Commandments. I didn't perform these miracles, even put the golden calf. I put the golden snake up on a pole, but I didn't save anybody. Who did that? God did that. And God, the same God who was with us for that, is going to be with you for the future. And so that's what we need to remember. And as we think about in our own families what we're passing on. You know, my goal in my life and what I want to pass on to my kids, there'll be a day when I'm not there for my kids. I'll be gone. But I want to remind them that God will still be with them. So I think about my grandkids and what's most important for me to leave with them, and that's a relationship with God, so that when I'm not there for them any longer, God, they're still with God and they're still following God. And so that's what we have to think about, and that God will lead them into the promised land. So He says, the Lord will lead you. But look at what else He says in verse 3. He says, Joshua will lead you.
Kind of unique, Pastor, that as soon as he said, I will not cross over, he didn't dwell on that. He immediately pointed them back to God.
He pointed them back to God.
Because you know there's going to be some that would be like you. What do you mean you're not going with us? You know, and all you've been through with us, now you're not crossing over. But he didn't dwell on that. He pointed them right back where they need to be thinking, yeah, rather than thinking about himself. So
yeah,
that's pretty unique and a great leader.
And he said, I won't go, but God's going with you. I won't go, but Joshua's going with you. Now, Joshua was a young man, and he was only 80 at this time. You know, so Moses at 120 was finally at retirement, and Joshua was just getting started at 80. And they still had the land to take. But that's the other thing. And one of the first lessons I learned, that first little church I was at, and I told you there were 7 people there our first Sunday there. And God blessed us. I had no clue what I was doing. But God blessed us anyways. And we grew till we averaged the second year I was there. We were averaging 35 every Sunday. We had a high attendance of 70. And how God did that, I still have no clue. But here's the thing. When we left, I thought, well, they're just going to fall apart when I'm gone. I was still young and didn't understand that my job was to have them better off when I left so that they would do better when I left. And they called actually a man from our church. And they, you know what, they didn't fall apart. They did better after we left and went to another church down across to another town down the highway. But that's what it's all about. And you know, when Hayden Center left, eventually I got here. And when I leave, eventually God will have a different person here to lead Heritage to. But the key is He's still going to be the one in control. And so what we think about are the different people God has used in our life to point us closer to God. So think about that for a minute. Who did God use in your life when you were a youngster, a child or a teenager? Who are some of the people that God impacted you with?
Charles Berry Christmas.
Charles Christmas. Yeah, I know Charles.
And I'm 82.
I'm just getting started.
Yeah, me and Josh. So, but think about it. Who else for you? Who?
Sunday school teachers.
I mean, I think about, you know, I've mentioned my grandmother before and my mom, of course, but, you know, I think about some of those Sunday school teachers. One of them, when Elena posted the stuff Sunday about the anniversary, she wrote me a long message and sent it to me. Her name is Sue Koontz, and she was my fourth and fifth grade, not Sunday school, but discipleship or training union teacher. I was going to say discipleship union. She was my training union teacher. That's how far that goes back. But again, she impacted my life and how she invested in me. And yet I could probably name a dozen people like that. And one for a season, and then God brought another, and then God brought another. And a matter of fact, I was talking to a local young pastor here, and so I began to think about, I guess with this anniversary, and y'all recognize that I've been nostalgic lately, but I was thinking about that 20-year-old pastor that didn't know what he was doing, and thinking about Gene Richards, who invested in me and helped me as I was serving there. And then I think when I went to the next church, when I was at Hillsdale, Hillsdale's outside of Amit, Louisiana, and the pastor at First Baptist Amit was Tommy Hicks. And we didn't even know what mentoring was in those days, Neil. I'd never heard the term. But every Thursday morning, I went to First Baptist, and I sat down in Tommy's office with a cup of coffee. I went to get a cup of coffee because we couldn't afford coffee at the house. And I went to get a cup of coffee, and I would sit in his office, and he would say, "Okay, Tim, what are you preaching on Sunday?" And I'd tell him, and he would start talking about when he preached on that passage or something like that. And then he would tell me what he was preaching at First Amit that Sunday. And he invested in me, and I didn't even realize how much. And whenever I had a problem at church and didn't know what to do, guess what I did? I went and got a cup of coffee at Tommy's. And he talked to me and invested in me. Well, you know, we were there at Hillsdale for 5 years. And of course, I had professors that invested in me too, but we moved to York Terrace. And all of a sudden, I'm the pastor of a church with other full-time staff members. I'm 29 years old by that time. I was, you know, I'd been a pastor 9 years, but I'd never had a staff member before because, even our minister of music at Hillsdale was completely volunteer. And our youth minister, completely volunteer. And so the only other person who was paid besides me was the lady who cleaned the church once a week. Darlena did all the secretarial work for us. And so all of a sudden, here I am with a full-time minister of education and a full-time minister of music, and I didn't know, and two secretaries. I didn't know what to do or how to handle some things. And Tom Watley and Sammy Gilruth. Sammy was at Highland Church there in Florence, and Tom Watley was pastor of Woodmont in Muscle Shoals, and I would meet with both of them once a month for a cup of coffee in their office, and they would talk to me. Well, how did you know? I mean, at Bethel, I had at Sunny Hill, my first church, I didn't have any deacons. At Bethel, I had two. At Hillsdale, I had about six. I mean, I got to York Terrace, and I had 15. I didn't know what to do with 15 deacons, let alone what to do with 45 when I came to Heritage. I would sit and talk with them, and they helped me. They mentored me, and they invested in me. So And again, I came to Heritage, and as you know, these three guys coming to do our revival, the first week I became the pastor here, Travis Coleman called me and said, hey, Rick Marshall and Mike Northcutt and I meet once a month for breakfast at Chappie's just to talk. Would you like to join us? And so since 2010, once a month, I've met with those three guys and eaten breakfast. And so they invested in me. And so, you know, you think about all those people who've invested in you, and that's, I didn't intend to spend this much time on this, but we need to reflect on that and think about what those people mean to us. And but also know that there's always somebody else down the road. And also know that sometimes we're Moses or we're Joshua, and we need to get people ready, and we need to be that person for somebody else that's coming along and remind them of that. So Joshua will lead you. And you think about that. How do you think Joshua felt? He had been the number two guy for quite a while. He's 80 years old now, but Moses has been the leader. I want you to think about following Moses. You know, he was the last guy that had this job, you know. And think about that and how intimidating that was. And that's why when we talk about Joshua and as we move into it next week, you know, Moses is dead before Joshua starts. But Moses is mentioned 54 times in the book of Joshua. You know, how many times do you think Joshua heard Moses didn't do it this way? You know? Well, you're a good preacher, but you sure aren't what Moses was. You know? And yet, God had called him and preparing him for that moment. So here's the important thing. Look at verse 4 and 5. And the Lord will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, whom he destroyed along with their land. And the Lord will deliver them to you, and you must do to them all that I commanded. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you, and he will never leave you or forsake you. And then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all of Israel, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their forefathers to give them. And you must divide it among them as their inheritance. And the Lord himself will go before you and will be with you, and he will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. So the first thing he says is the Lord will do it. As you move to the future, God, remember, it's in God's hands. Whatever, however exciting it is, however bleak it is, it's in God's hands. And he's going to go with you no matter what you're facing. Remember, God is with you. And then he tells the people, be strong and courageous because God is with you. He tells the whole nation, all right, you got a new leader, but you be strong and courageous because God is with you. And then he tells Joshua, be strong and courageous because God is with you. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. What's interesting, when you get to Joshua chapter 1, three times in Joshua chapter 1, God tells Joshua, be strong and courageous. So again, here's Joshua. Remember, Joshua had become the commander of the army. But yet, every time we see him here taking over for Moses, and then in chapter 1 when he does, he's told four times personally just to him, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed. You would think the guy who's the head general of the whole army doesn't have a courage problem, right? But that's what he's told four different times here once and then three times in Joshua chapter 1. And so we all need to remember, and even as leaders, we need to remember to be strong and courageous. Why? Not because we're great leaders, but because God is with us. And what we need to remember as a people, whoever's leading us, we need to remember God is with us. And we need to follow as God is leading and be courageous as we move into the future that's uncertain. It's a good word for us right now. We're looking for leaders in our convention. Sometimes we're looking for leaders in church. Sometimes people to step up to the plate. We definitely need leaders in our society, don't we? But here's the truth. No matter how bad it is or how much of a lack of leadership we may think we have, God is still on His throne. God is still leading His people. And we can be courageous and we don't have to despair because God is with us. And we need to put our trust in Him and we need to follow Him and we need to allow Him to lead us.